Hello and welcome back to the Education on Fire podcast with me, Mark Taylor. Today I'm joined by Brian Green, who's the CEO and founder of GigaJam.com. And he's somebody that I spoke to at the BET show earlier back in January, which is when you would have remembered from my season two, we went around and did lots of stuff based on tech. But this particularly was really interesting to me because obviously it's music related as well as the tech. And so having spoken to Brian, I said, I definitely need to get him on when we start doing our music season, which is where we are now here in season four. So thanks for being on the show, Brian. I'm really glad we're going to get a chance to chat now and really dive into what GigaJam is all about. So welcome. And could you just give us a bit of history about yourself and how GigaJam was formed and a sort of an idea of what GigaJam is?
Yes, of course. Thanks, Mark, and thanks for inviting us on the show. I really appreciate that. My background is one of a professional musician. I wouldn't go as far as to say session player, although I did do Generation Game and Record Breakers and a few other TV things that I was very fortunate to play on, thoroughly enjoyed. But most of my work was commercial work, so that would be shows, pantomimes, summer seasons, tours, playing with a few bands and bits and pieces like that. So I was very fortunate to have a quite a varied professional career as I started out. As I got a bit older, touring became less appealing, so I wanted to work more from home. So I sort of reinvented myself to become a drum teacher at Drum Tech in London, which is now part of the BIM group. At that time, it was developing into higher education for further education, and I ended up as the academic head there for a while, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And to some extent, I actually began to realise that teaching and coaching was a really sort of really enjoyable skill. And it touched on other parts of my skill base that I hadn't realised existed. So I thoroughly enjoyed that. And I was fortunate enough to actually become a university lecturer at Thames Valley University at the time, as was now University of West London, which took me in a whole new direction. So I had this, I think people now are very used to the idea of having a portfolio career. But at that time, you tended to do one or the other. So I was playing as a professional musician and university lecturer. And then I started to say, well, look, we've got a problem here, that we had people coming into Drum Tech who really wanted to be professional players. But at that time, which was sort of mid-90s, the formal education of musicians was really done by the conservatoires and Royal Academy of Music and the classical grades. So rock and pop music at that time was not terribly well taught, certainly not very well structured. So somewhere like Drum Tech was a bit of a godsend, but even that was quite ad hoc. And students were coming through on the possibility of going into higher education and getting a degree in performing arts. And actually, the structures really, really weren't there. And the ability level was really quite patchy. You had very talented musicians, but they weren't trained for all the necessary disciplines to become professional musicians. So I was very fortunate to be at that moment, that changeover, where that whole education in rock and pop started to become more professional. Rock school started to come through, et cetera, et cetera. And to some extent, the rest is history. So rock and pop now is really well taught across the board. But there was a problem in that there was a scale issue. So there were lots of people who were coming to the university who just didn't have the skills. And of course, we know that's still the case to a large extent, because there is a huge amount of demand for music lessons, but not the number of teachers and not the amount of money available to be able to fund people to have lessons to enable them to develop their skills, or even in the first instance have the opportunity to even see that they have a chance of learning to play an instrument. That's where GigaJam came from, where I looked at the scale issue and said, look, what we need to do is take quality education. We need to now make it available to everybody, not just in these centres of excellence in London at the time, and Guildford was coming through there, the ACM, but actually to look at how the internet can reach more people, more scalably, and more affordably. So, you know, a Drum Tech course at that time would have been £3,500-£4,000, so it's a considerable. I know that sounds like peanuts now, when it's £10,000 a year, but in those days it was it was certainly for the elite. So that's very much where GigaJam was born.
And so it sounds really as if You know, it's that sort of, say, it's guitar, bass, keyboards, drums, that's kind of the basis of it, which of course children, especially in schools, are kind of, that's their sort of, their immediate understanding. It's what they hear the most of, probably, you would say, these days in school as well. So from a practical standpoint then, having set Giga Jam up, how does it work within a school setup, or how does it work as an online organization?
Yeah, so there's two sides to it. And I think focusing on the educational side, if I may, it's very much about using the internet into the classroom in support of the teacher's delivery to provide what is in England. It's not the case in Scotland, for instance, but under the English curriculum and many curriculums that we see abroad, is that actually learning to play a musical instrument is not part of the DNA, really, of many curriculums in music, and hasn't been stressed, certainly by the national curriculum. You will get teachers who will want to do that as a natural course, but actually most learning of a musical instrument takes place outside of the music classroom, in the surrounding rooms, and is often undertaken with the support of the music services. So what we wanted to do was to provide classroom teachers with more opportunities to bring instrumental learning into the classroom as part of the curriculum, to support their students to become more musically literate and more musically skilled, to be able to engage fully in the national curriculum, which is very much about music making, is very much about performing, it's about listening to others, etc. I don't need to tell you what's in the curriculum, but those things are difficult to do if you can't articulate yourself as a musician. Not impossible, but hard to do. And I know there are great arguments about music as an academic subject, etc., etc. But I think most people would expect, when their child goes to a secondary school, that their child would have an opportunity to learn to play a musical instrument, for instance. So how does it actually work is simply there is a kind of replication or simulation of the one-to-one concept that you would have in as a student going out of the classroom, in that the computer has the lessons all effectively recorded for the individual students, guitar, bass, keyboards and drums. A classroom teacher then facilitates that learning so that students can have a one-to-one experience with the computer, but supported by the classroom teacher. So, you know, for instance, if you're learning to play the keyboard, you'll have your lessons online. The whole course is laid out in front of you. You go from exercise to exercise, learning both the theory and the practical. You record your performances into the computer. There's a little bit of software there that gives you immediate feedback as to how you're doing, so that the student can start to make decisions. Oh, how well did I do? You know, what do I need to do better? And then they can repeat that process as much as they like within an exercise, and then over the whole course, building up their portfolio and building up their skills over time, and actually even gaining grades as a result. But the teacher actually then has a different role. It's a little bit like musical futures, in that the teacher becomes much more of a facilitator of the learning rather than the guider of the learning. It is quite interesting that I actually read Lucy Green's book, you know, at about the same time that the Musical Futures guys were reading Lucy Green's book. And I came up with Giga Jam and they came up with Musical Futures. So sort of a different sort of response to that identification of how young people learn music. And mine was very much about the difficulties that children, students, young people and adults, in fact, we have quite a lot of older people who learn the Giga Jam, but actually that ability to learn on your own, but being very, very supported with the continual and formative assessment to enable you to see whether you're making progress. So beyond the individual interaction that takes place, I'm always at pains to say, it does look like a child is operating in a vacuum, but you know what it's like in a busy classroom. You've got conversation that takes place between the teacher and the students and the student they're sitting next to. You have this peer-to-peer learning going on. I often see a student saying, hang on a minute, you haven't played that power chord correctly because you've played all six strings instead of just the bottom two strings. And then a child, as a result of their student's intervention, has actually improved their score. So, you know, it's not about the technology. It's about how the technology enhances learning. So it's very much about technology enhanced learning rather than technology replacing a traditional form of directed teaching.
I see that. And in terms of a technology point of view, does a school need to have a certain amount of instruments and technology to begin with, or is that provided as part of the package of what you offer?
No, our package is very light, and we do offer some bundles through third-party suppliers, but that starts to get us into traders,
yes.
And suppliers rather than something else, and that's not something that I've ever wanted PeakyJam to be unduly distracted by. No, we deliver the software and the license. And then what we would normally expect is that schools would use the computers that they have available to them. And often classrooms are full of little mini keyboards of some description, where they have a good starting point to be able to interact with our program at the earliest stages. And many of our schools come on board on the basis of, right, we're going to use the keyboard package. Then they go, right, this works, we like this. The next easy thing to implement in terms of size, odd as this may seem, is these small kind of Yamaha DD65 or the kind of replica type Chinese model makes, like Gear for Music Maker, people like that. Small tabletop drum kits with the little pedals that sort of replace the keyboard. So they expand it through the keyboards into the drums as well. And then they tend to build their practice around their experience.
So it sounds like a very sort of secondary school kind of setup in terms of the, I remember sort of from being at school, that kind of everyone sat around sort of with a keyboard doing some kind of thing. And I really love the fact that there's much more progress and assessment and understanding of what's going on there. But do you also have the experience of being in primary schools as well?
Yes, thank you. That's a great question. I think the interesting thing about GigaJam is I would argue that GigaJam is appropriate from about the age of 10 upwards. Now, I've seen GigaJam being used with younger students, but of course that requires more intervention from the teacher. But we've got, say, for instance, in the Highland Council, where we've been working with those guys, or they've been working on their own, quite frankly, supplying GigaJam to 84 of their primary schools for the last 15 years. And they use a music service teacher to go and support the local primary schools in delivery. So that's part of their package. That's their kind of wider opportunities. It's through the Youth Music Initiative that's very successful in Scotland. And as I say, that's been going a very long time. And that in itself demonstrates its success at primary level. You know, we've got schools in London, so West Byfleet, South West London, that's a very long standing primary customer. That's a junior school. And they use it in a very different way. So you've got classrooms, which are used in curriculum time with the classroom teachers. You've got the Highland Council model, where that's kind of bussed in, and it is literally bussed in because it's such a rural setting for them. They actually have two vans. One goes one way, or I like to think of it, they drive out of the gates on a Monday morning. One van goes in one direction, the van goes in the opposite direction. Now, that could be absolute nonsense, but that's how I like to see it in my very simple Mr. Ben world. And they go visit the schools, and they have some equipment on their vans, as well as some equipment in the schools, so when the van drives away, they've still got some stuff to practice with. So that's a kind of, you know, once a week style, drop in and learn. Secondary schools like Horbury Academy in Wakefield, they use it religiously, for want of a better word, in their classrooms. And West Byfleet, they use it as an after-school club. So we've also had Witham Park Academy in Blackburn, for instance, have used it breakfast club, lunch club, after school, in class, from home, in all sorts of different settings. So, yes, my main targeting is secondary schools, of course, but it can be used in a wide variety of settings, including colleges, adult education, and we've got the Institute of Technology in Tralee in the Republic of Ireland, who use it as part of their teacher training, how to use technology in music. So it can be used in a very wide range of settings.